In 2018, Rhoda Ahmed published May Among the Stars, the story of Mae Jemison, the first African-American woman to travel to space. In the short time since then, the book has inspired countless children and taught them to always follow their dreams, no matter their gender or color of skin. And on the ensuing book tour, Rhoda got to interact with those kids, but left inspired herself.
You would hear the most remarkable dreams children have. Everything from wanting to become an astronaut after reading the book, to a lion, an elephant, a doctor. Someone wanted to cure cancer to save their mom that's sick. It's just the imaginary world of possibilities. I know we are in tough times right now, but I really feel the generation that is growing up during this time is going to change the world.
Born in Somalia and raised in Norway, Rhoda speaks five languages and has now founded her own publishing company. We talked to her on Zoom from her home in Oslo this summer about why she wrote May Among the Stars and how important representation is in children's literature. We also discussed challenges she herself has had to overcome and how she felt when she finally got to meet Mae Jemison. I'm Andrew Kaufman, and this is The Strategist, presented by the George W. Bush Presidential Center. We're really excited to welcome our guest, the truly remarkable Rhoda Ahmed. Rhoda is the author of May Among the Stars, the critically acclaimed children's storybook, which is a selection on Mrs. Bush's 2020 reading list for kids. She's also the founder and CEO of High Tree Publishing, and her latest book is Goodnight Wiggly Toes. Rhoda, thanks for being here all the way from Oslo.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you so much for having me. I am so grateful to be here.
Well, and we are thrilled. And also welcome back to today's co-host, Ann Wicks, the Ann Kimball Johnson Director of the Education Reform Initiative. Good morning. Welcome back, Ann.
Hi, Andrew. Hi, Rhoda. I'm really excited for our conversation today.
So before hitting record, we were chatting some about imagination and started going down that rabbit hole. So Ann, why don't you kick us off and pick up there?
Yeah, we were talking about a little bit, but we were chatting just before we got started that I think when I was reading your book, I was reminded of this, like the rich imaginative world that kids live in naturally, right? And how important it is to respect that in kids. Even though sometimes it's, you might think, oh, it's funny, or you wouldn't do, you know, it can be really amusing, but how, because kids are really imagining their own possibilities all the time and trying on things and imagining worlds. And I'd love for you to talk about that because it feels like it's important in your work. And how do you think about the worlds that kids live in and what our job is as adults to help bring them through into their possibilities?
That's such a great question. Thank you for that. I love children and their world and our world in general. I really do think we have so much to learn from children. So when I wrote May Among the Stars, I went on this epic book tour and visited over 100 schools and thousands of kids. And after every reading, I would have everyone close their eyes and then we would play this game, like really, really hard game where everyone has to sit still and close their eyes. They're like, ah, I'm like, this game is really hard to play. I'm telling you, it's like the hardest game. Some people think it's easy, but it's really, really hard. They're like, we can play it, we can play it. And then we would like close our eyes. And then I would tell them to think about how they are going to change the world when they grow up. And then I would count to three. And if after three, we would raise our hand and share our dreams. And you would hear the most remarkable dreams children have. Everything from wanting to become an astronaut after reading the book to a lion, yeah, an elephant, a doctor. Someone wanted to cure cancer to save their mom that's sick.
Oh.
It's just the imaginary world of possibilities. I know we are in tough times right now, but I really feel the generation that is growing up during this time is going to change the world for real. There is no limits.
they're so, you're right that if it's like, if we just keep harnessing all of that, like energy and creativeness that kids are just, that's just like, they're like steeped in it, right? Like they're, that's just who they are. And it sort of changes as we get older, and it feels really powerful what they see from where they sit. I was low key stalking your Instagram before we talked to you and sort of looking at some of the things that you had, you'd posted. And I know there was a little clip of a little boy when it must've been one of your school readings who talks about how he wants to be an astronaut like May. And then,
I really do feel if in 20 years from now, we'll see like a new generation of astronaut. I feel like I'm recruiting for NASA at times. So, but I really do believe we all have that in us, right? That when I was little, so I'm one of seven siblings, there's eight of us in total, and I'm number seven. So every Saturday, my dad would take me to the library. And that would be like our special time together. I would pick up some books, and then I would read them. And then I had to retell them in order to go back the following Saturday. Ah. We kept this up for a few years. And then he asked me, Rhoda, when you grow up, what do you want to be? If you can be anything in the whole world, what would you be? And I was like, anything? He's like, yeah, anything. And I was like, well, I really, really would love to write books. I would love to write a book and have my name written on a book. And then I kind of thought about it. 20 years passed, 25 years passed. I studied anthropology. I traveled. And then I wrote my first novel. And that novel is in the same library me and my dad used to go.
I mean,
oh,
and there you go.
Serendipitous.
So I share that story with children. So before I talk about May and how May, when she was little, you know, she really wanted to travel to space. That was like her biggest dream. And when she was only 16, she went to college and studied and became, you know, a doctor. She studied medical, and then she got recruited to NASA, 2,000 people, and went to space. So I tell them, if you can dream it and believe it and work really, really, really hard, that anything really is possible. And I see that in them. And I really, truly believe that.
Say amen. That's so true. It's so true. But Andrew, were you going to ask about the book?
We want to spend a little time talking about May Among the Stars. And it's just such a beautiful storybook, and it's deservedly become an international hit. And can you tell us a little bit about how that book came to be?
Yes. When I... you know, I love books again, and I had my own children. And when they were little, I would look for a book. We moved to New York, and I would look for books to read to them. And, you know, growing up in Norway, where everyone is blonde with blue eyes, there's not a lot of diversity in children's books. So it's understandable. And then we were living in New York, and then I just couldn't find books that I could read for them. And then I thought it was a little strange. And then I kept, of course, you found the classics of like Ezra Jack Keats and Vanessa Brantley Newton and all those amazing books. And then somewhere I read that a black woman went to space. And then I was like, what? No, she didn't. And then I started researching, and then I started asking my friends and family and parents, and no one knew this. Huh. And I started looking for books about her. And when I couldn't find one, I just decided to write one. So I wrote it. I just had this idea of like taking my dad's lesson and what I wanted to give to my children about hard work and dreams and beliefs and magic, and put it in there. And then I just Googled illustrators that knows how to draw astronauts on Google, and just scrolled through thousands of illustrators. And then I found this amazing illustrator, Stasia, on Etsy. And then I sent her an email, and I said, hey, Stasia, I love your drawings. Do you write, you know, illustrate children's books? And then she said, no, never. And I said, me neither, but I'll figure it out.
How do
I? And then I sent her the script. And then since I've read, you know, hundreds of books for my children, I kind of knew the format and the word count and the double spread. And so I just art directed it, and we put it together, colored it, all of it, all done. But in America, you need an agent to even have someone look at your books. So then my friend introduced me to her agent, Margaret, who works at William Morris and Endeavor. And we had a meeting with her, amazing, amazing woman. And then she says, well, you know, the only thing is like, I don't do children's books. Usually I do YA or adult novels. But and I said, well, man, you know, I'm a little superstitious. And you know, since it's called William Morris and Endeavor and May Space Shuttle was called Endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes, ooh, well, let me see what I can do.
Oh, all right.
So then Margaret asked what publishing house. And then I said, my dream would be HarperCollins because, again, I keep passing that building and I stop and I look up every day on my way to the New York Public Library. So that would be a dream. And then she called and she said, you know, HarperCollins loves it and wants to publish it.
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of how May came about. And then fast forward a few years later, granted, it took a lot of years from the book was finished to it actually came out. We went to the Barnes & Nobles I used to go with my daughter and we bought it. So that was kind of
like amazing.
A big moment of like,
just from generation to generation.
Yeah.
Did you, so the illustrations are so engaging. I love that. Yes. And they're so, They're really, I don't know if there's, I'm sure there's like an art term for it that I don't have, but they're friendly, plus they're like delightful to look at, right? There's a lot to look at in them.
There's a little whimsy in there.
Yeah. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you. So have you met May? Did you meet May Jameson?
Yeah. So then, of course, I've been like my, and then again, another dream of like, I need to meet May. Like HarperCollins tried to get a hold of her for years. I tried for years. I mean, I've sent so many books to Mae Jemison addresses of all over America. So if your name is Mae Jemison and you received a book from me, I'm sorry. but so then it was kind of like this, you know, mythical figure or like this national treasure that I was just so fascinated about that, you know, the book just is being shared by people reading it and loving it and give it to someone else. And, you know, it's in 13th printing right now. And then I was like, I can't believe I still haven't met her. Like, where is she? And then one night in the middle of the night, I wake up and then I had this aha moment of Googling Dr. Mae Jemison speaking engagement 2018. I know. And I think of that. I know. Anyway, so then I saw that she was going to give a lecture in North Carolina. So I booked, you know, a meet and greet, bought the tickets. They weren't that expensive. And asked a friend of mine to come with. And then we go there. I was so nervous. Ooh, I was so nervous. I was like, is she going to not like me? Have she heard about the book? Am I stalking her too much? But like, I don't know. But like what this Rhoda obsession about May, but it was just such a life turning, you know, life magical moment ever. I will never forget as long as I live. And we go and I'm so nervous. I don't sleep. I don't eat. I'm just like all over the place. And my friend Jasmine is like, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And then we get in line. And as we're waiting in line, this little girl comes up to me and she is, excuse me. And I looked down, excuse me. And I looked down, yes. Are you Rhoda? And she's holding a book.
Oh.
I start bawling, like scared that little poor child. I was like, yes. And then my friend's like, okay, calm down. I'm like, oh, yeah. So I was like, yes, that's me. Oh my goodness. I am so lucky. You're holding like, what a gift that you know, and can you sign it? And then of course. And then, I signed the book and then right behind her, another kid comes with his mom. And then all of a sudden it's like a line of, you know, hundreds of kids with the book. And then I just couldn't I mean, even now talking about it, you can't see it on the podcast, but I'm like breaking into the ugly card.
No, I mean, that's just,
that's amazing.
But that's it, right? When you're talking about like kids got excited about a possibility that they could anchor to a real person, right? Like, and how meaningful that is and why all that is so important when we talk about representation and storytelling, right? You know, what you were describing, what you experienced both in Norway and New York when you're trying to read for your own children. And I just, I think it's cool. Maybe that, I mean, I'd love to know a little bit about, I know part of your new publishing house and your new CEO role is a little bit about that, but could you tell us a little bit about sort of how you're taking on that work now and thinking about storytelling for kids?
Yeah. Thank you for asking. So, so then, you know, after meeting May and seeing with my own eyes the power of a book, because you never forget a book you read as a child, right? Like, I don't know, Andrew, what was your favorite book when you were a kid?
What age? Like little kid?
Yeah, little.
Little Engine That Could. I was a huge Little Engine That Could guy. My mom must have read it to me. Like, she kept trying to read other books and be like, no. Back to the Little Engine That Could, if you don't mind, please. I loved that. And also loved the value books. I don't know if you're familiar with those, but I came from the era. It was a collection of about 30 books that taught different lessons through like Helen Keller was determination, I remember. That like and Louis Pasteur was, I don't remember what his was, but it was all these different historical figures that were taught lessons through their stories in these picture books. I think it was called the Value Book Series. And, sorry, I cut you off, Anne. I just wanted to keep going.
I want to check those out. What about you, Anne?
I loved The Little House, which I'm trying to think. I think that's the, I don't think there's more to the title, but it's a story of a little house that was in the country. It's actually remarkable now that I think about it, because this book must be like 45, 50 years old, but it was it started out in the country and then it gentrified around it. And so this little house ended up in the middle of a big city, and sort of what made the house sad and what was happening around it. And then it gets moved back to the country at the end. And I just remember thinking like, that was like understanding that the world moves and changes and what can happen and the change happens. I just was always so fascinated by that book. And it was had the same kind of whimsical illustrations in it that I always thought.
Oh, wow.
Does your son love it?
Not yet, Andrew. He's really into superheroes.
Attaway.
And so anything about like superheroes saving the day is his jam right now.
Good man.
That's a fun.
Rhoda, what about you? You asked us, and we're asking you. We're asking the questions around here. What about you?
No, but I love knowing that. Early on, this is, you know. I love Pippi Longstocking. And the first story I ever wrote when I learned how to write was that Pippi had a brown friend, and that was me.
Oh my gosh.
Because Pippi's dad, like, they changed it over the years. But Pippi's dad was like the king. He got kidnapped in Africa, and he was like, then became like the king of all the black people in Africa. And then they had like all these drawings that didn't make me feel great, because I was like, well, that's not how we look. Like, we have clothes. We don't have a bone sticking out of our nose. And I just remember that was like the first story I ever wrote. I'm like, oh, so I just didn't want my kids growing up noticing they weren't in books. So when they were little, I had this huge strategy of like only reading animal and vegetable books so they wouldn't notice. So, you know, and then as they got older, now I thought like, I want their kids to grow up knowing about other heroes that not necessarily, you know, that the narrative shouldn't start with history. It should just start with I just want the same children's books as everyone else get to read, that the Halloween book and the princess book, and because children identify through abilities and hobbies and likes and dislikes, not necessarily, you know, we wouldn't read about the Holocaust for a child that's five, you
right.
know, we do that for when they're older. And so I just see a lot of just the lack of that. So instead of just looking at the problem, I like to come up with solutions and there has to be a different way. And yeah, so that's kind of how High Tree Publishing started, because I just made the other books the same way I made May. And it takes 3 months to make a book. And for it to be available, it's less than 6 months. So I just did it again. And now I've done 12 books and 4 of them are finished and they're just going to come out. And but I also were so grateful. The experience I had with May was that I just learned so much about the American school system and literature in children in general. And then seeing how a school that has funding can afford having an author visit, and then the parents can afford buying books for their kids. And then, you know, a few blocks down the street, you would have a school that never had an author visit, and the kids, you know, they get meal for school. So then I didn't feel it was right to ask them to purchase books when they can't purchase food. So then I would have friends and family buy books so I could go visit the schools nearby. And that's kind of how I got the whole idea of like just having friends and family buy bulks of books so I can just give the books for free to children who necessarily don't have books, because books shouldn't be, you know, a privilege. It should just be a right. And then I meet children that in the age, you know, fourth grade, never own a book. And what a privilege that gets to be your book about an astronaut. Then I feel like I can contribute in making books.
Yes. Yeah, it's really important. And the Laura Bush Foundation, so Mrs. Bush's foundation that she has that supports school libraries, is designed around how do we help schools like the ones that you're describing that don't have a lot of resources. And that usually means the school library is lower on the list, right? That we're able to give some grants to those schools to help add more books to their libraries. So for so many kids, right, the school library might be the place where they're able to get a book and read at home. And it's really, it's such an important thing for kids to, especially early readers, to be actually with a physical book, practicing and learning how to read and engaging with stories. So we'll be excited to watch for the books that you guys put out.
Thank you. That's such a great work you were doing there. And I really do believe that within the first few months of school, you should see yourself in a book. That should just be like the baseline of like, if you're a teacher or a principal, look at the reading list and then see, even though if it's like predominantly all white school, all Hispanic school, like it doesn't matter, but are our children seeing themselves being reflected back to them when they open a book? And when you see someone that looks like you, it just makes you happy, you know? And I've also noticed that reading May and sharing it with thousands of kids, every time I ask, like, there's a portion in the book, you probably know, when the teacher asks the students about what they want to be when they grow up. And May says she really wants to go to space and become an astronaut. And the teacher says, don't you mean nurse? Nurse would be good for someone like you. And then I ask the kids, like, why would she say that? Why do you think so? And they're like, yeah, that was mean, yeah. And then, and till this day, I've been to over 100 schools, not once have a child said it's because she's brown. They've said it's because she's a girl.
Oh, interesting.
Wow.
And, interesting. Wow.
And the teacher don't think girls can go to space. So
wow,
it really reassured me that race and color is something adults see that's not intuitive in a child. That's especially for the age group I visit. So that's really powerful for me to be like,
Did you face the same thing that May faced in the book? Did anyone ever, like, we keep hearing about how you've chased your dreams and you mentioned that your father really encouraged them and that you've chased them. Did you ever have a roadblock like that, like May faced?
Good question. So yeah, on a smaller scale though, because in second grade in Norway, we get to choose between drawing and sewing. I know I sound like I was born in the 18th century, but like choose the two, like either you learn how to sew a pillow or to draw. And I signed up for the drawing class. And the teacher after the first class said, maybe you should switch to sewing. So I kind of like never thought I knew how to draw since. Like, then I just drew stick figures. And then in college, we needed someone to draw for a project we were doing. And then they voted me to do it. And I was like, I really can't draw. And then it turns out I actually I'm decent. I'm okay. I can, like, copy whatever. So,
you know, I'm thinking back now to my school days, and I think, as I recall, we had the option between home ec and wood shop, as I recall, and anyone could take either one. There was no requirement one way or the other which way you could go.
Yeah. Which one did you take?
You know, I did end up taking wood shop, and while I'm not handy now and in my adulthood, I did really learn there that I do enjoy building things. I like the process of creation, and I ended up following a slightly different route, going computer science and engineering. But I, you know, that did was an early influence.
Well, that's cool. What about you, Anne?
Well, my school, it's so funny. I was just thinking about this. I think we were required to do both. We had shop, which it was either, I remember making a toolbox. I also remember making like a wooden mail slot thing you hung on your wall. But we also had home economics, where we got to, you know, cook and sew. I remember sewing some pillow project. None of my output was high quality. Like, I did not suggest greatness on either side, but it's funny, these subtle cues that we give kids, subtle or not so subtle, about what's expected and where it's expected. And I really loved that you included that in the book, like that it was very, it's very obvious, and it was sort of a, because it's a cue to the adult readers as much as it is, you know, a something for the children to discuss and reflect on, as you were talking about what you do with them. And was,
yeah,
were you, yeah, how did you think about that when you were writing it?
I read it like in several different sources. And then it was interesting, actually, because we had a huge debate. I had a huge debate with the editor and the publishing house, because they really wanted to maybe not have that in, because it's a little harsh.
Yeah.
And, you know, and a lot of teachers are going to read it, and, you know, and then I was like, well, can you imagine that happening to you when you're 9? Like, that is harsh.
Yeah.
And then you still end up going to space, you know, it's such a triumph, and it doesn't make the teacher a villain, but again, I felt it was like the heart of the book, because she gets sad, and then when you read it out loud, the kids get really sad too. They're going like, no, man, like, they're so upset.
Can't believe that.
They're like, what is she doing? She shouldn't do that, you know. And it also, you know, empowers the parent, that, you know, just the reinsurance and enforcement of love and encouragement. I think you can do anything. Like, the mom sees her and believes in her, and yeah.
That is, I was so happy. I was imagining that there may have been a conversation with editors when I saw that, just given how it's written. And I was just really thrilled that it was in, because it's real. I think it's real for kids, and it's so identifiable. So good on you for keeping it in. I think that's it. So can I ask you a question about language? I'm fascinated, because I know you speak 5 languages. You are a published author in at least 2 of those languages.
Yes.
And when you're creating, how does language play a part? Do you think about like a story and some stories in one language or another, or like, just how does your brain work when you're creating in all of the languages that you speak?
Oh, that's a really good question. How does my brain, so I'm dyslexic on top of it. So I don't write well. I say I speak the way I write, and what sometimes I don't know what, you know, I've been in Norway too long, so now I could feel my English being like, am I still speaking English? Yes, I can still speak English. But yeah, it depends, actually. Like, I'll daydream in Somali, or when I talk to my family, it's usually we always speak Somali because that was required at home. And with my children and my husband, we always speak Norwegian. And then I have like French friends, and the Arabic is the one that suffered the most because I don't get to practice it as much. But I really feel lucky that I, you know, have access to all these different cultures of storytelling and books and narratives. And I think it's just been such a gift that it adds to my life, because you get to play with words in another way of like, you know, and I make a lot of people laugh because they'll be like, no, that's not how you say it. You can't say that, or you can't do that, or that's the wrong.
I'm just lured by five languages. I'm struggling on my two that I have, and I'm
what embarrassed. Do you have?
I can speak some Spanish too, but it's
that's good.
I speak Spanish like a Texan though, and it's with a Texas drawl thrown in, and it's not pretty.
But that's good though. You were understood. That's what matters. That's what I always say about my fake Italian. It's like all it needs to sound like, you know.
So if we can communicate the thought, that's all that matters, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, I'm wondering, Andrew, can we talk Astrid a little bit about sort of the world we're living in now and what she sees going forward? So one of the things in my, as I said, my low-key Instagram stalking of you is the Dear Children video that you put out in June, which is really lovely. And there hasn't been much that I've seen of someone speaking directly to kids about this, like the rate of change and what's happening in the world is hard for adults to keep up with. What do children see? And so I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about what was behind that post for you and how you are thinking about the world today for kids, your own kids, the kids that you get to meet all the time.
Thank you for that. So that was actually, so I had a friends come with me when I did one of my book tours in New York, because what I was seeing was just so I couldn't keep it all to myself. So I had my friends from Dublin actually come out and stay with me for a week. And we went to visit 10 schools and festivals. And so the footage is from that book tour, just the power of a book when, regardless of, you know, the school you go visit, the book has the same impact because the kids are the same. They love the same thing. They're wowed by the same thing. They ask the same questions. So regardless of if it was like a beautiful school or a really heartbreaking inner city school, the light in the kids' eyes were the same. Like, they're just these amazing, beautiful souls that are looking at you and are just so excited to just grow up and bring the change. So when COVID hit, I felt that we keep forgetting about the kids. It's all about, you know, parents that have to work from home and this, you know, very big traumatic event in the whole world where the whole world is standing still. And I just wanted to reassure them that I know it's scary and we're all scared, but that it's also going to be okay. And I really do believe that, because I really do believe this generation is going to remember this. It's going to change them. And it's hard on adults, but kids are really resilient and brilliant and hard learners. And, you know, one of them is probably going to come up with a vaccine for this, and they grow up really fast compared to what we had to go through when we were kids. So then I just wanted to kind of like just a letter to them, give them that I see you and I hear you and I miss you. And just because I love visiting children and schools and hugging. And but I really do feel that we're going to be okay. We're all going to be okay. It's hard, really, really, really hard right now. But you're with your mom and dad, and you're with people that love you. And we are all in the same house together, confined together. And it brings out also the best in people, mm-hmm. not just the worst. And I feel a lot of attention right now is about what is dividing us and what's scary and fear. And that fear machine is being fed. And I just wish we could just, you know, be a little more like children. You know, if you're home, you're not sad. Like, you're jumping up and down. You're putting on that music. You're rolling on the floor. You're having a pillow fight. You know, you're spilling yourself. Take a glass of water and pour it on your head if you're sitting next to your child, and then see the look on their face, you know. So just adding a little more childlike magic into adult life, I think we all, that's a good medicine. So I've been really cherishing kid, you know, time with our children right now, even though, you know, they don't think I'm the best teacher, which, you know, debatable. I think I'm a great teacher. I just don't understand algebra. High school algebra, I have no idea. They are so smart. But yeah, so we're just, you know, I'm mindful of like, how do I want our children to remember this time? Like, how was mom and dad? What did they do for you? Like, we're called to step up as adults and as parents, and also take cues from children, because at the end of the day, it's all going to be okay. It will get better.
Yesterday, so as you're talking, I'm imagining what I saw yesterday. So my son's school went back in person 2 weeks ago. One of the schools that has done that, and they have worked really hard, taken a lot of precautions, but some of the parents volunteer at lunch to help make the lunches and deliver them. And we're all like masked up, shields, you know, like the whole thing. But it gave me a chance to see my son and his friends in the cafeteria, and they're all spaced out and they have the little dividers. And I was wondering, because I was like, what's this like for them? Is it serious? Is it quiet? Is it stressful for them? And of course, as you would imagine, there was like the chatter. There were kids that would get up and dance, right? They were eating, but they'd turn, you know, and kind of talk to their friends. Like, I kept thinking, this is like the wondrous adaptability of kids. We underestimate it, this sort of power. It's like a magic power they have, and how they're finding their way in these extreme circumstances. And it was a real moment of reflection, I think, for me, about what kids are so good at, right? And how it's really different, but that they find like the joy comes up. It's like weeds in the sidewalk, right? Like the joy is coming up for them. And I thought it was fun to see. It was good.
Thank you for sharing that. I really do feel they take cues from us, but we should really take cues from them. Because can you imagine, like, when you grow up, you'll be like, you know, when I was a kid, we had to wear space suits. and then their kids are going to be like, no, you didn't. And be like, yeah, we had to wear a mask to cover our faces and gloves and take all our groceries at the door and wash them in the bathtub. Be like, no, you did not. Like, it's like when we tell our kids we didn't have cell phones. They're like, yes, you did. Like, how did you not have cell phones?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so it's like any childhood is magic and it only happens once. So they just get that layer of history to add to theirs that is like kind of epic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and you made a good point too. When we were, before we started recording, we were just kind of chit-chatting before we started. You talked about how adults really are just bigger kids It's so true that when you force me to, you know, I've got a drum kit behind me. You can't see this on the podcast, but I've got a drum kit behind me. I said, no, you got to start this with a drum solo over there. And it kind of did. It kind of loosened made me feel a little more loose. Like, you feel better when you have a little fun in life.
Yeah.
Just like a kid.
Yeah. And we really are. You know, we were little once, and all those little components of memories and childhoods and books and stories and they're all in us. So I think if you're, you know, I feel it's such a privilege to be someone's parent, and I don't take it, you know, I take it very seriously. And I was like, wow, like they look up to everything that you do. And I mean, they just are stuck with me though in the house now. So again, they're like, oh, okay, mom, please, can you use your grown-up voice, mom? I'll easily, after reading with 400 kids, be like, okay, everyone. And they're like, oh, please stop.
They're like, mom, it's us. No, but I think you're making, like, if we're looking for direction, right? If we're looking for kids to help us get some direction, they just respond to our cues. So if you are, as you were just describing, you know, adults not pretending that nothing is happening, right? You're not ignoring it, but acknowledging the world is hard, but we all can help. We all can lead in ways that are big and small. And then the kids sort of see that. They understand, you know, it becomes part of who they are, about how we help each other and we try to do the right thing. And even though things aren't as much as what we want. And it's really like, that's actually been so instructional for adults right now, is to just to keep doing the right thing one step after another, and to keep as positive as you can. And it's a real sort of the responsibility, I guess is the right word, right, for the grownups right now. Like, what's the best thing grownups can do right now? And that's be mindful of who's watching, right? Like, who's watching and what are we giving them when they get big?
And also, all feelings are allowed, you know? So if you want to cry or if you're angry, like, it's not like just the happy ones, like all feelings are valid. So that too is just like, you know, if you just want to cry and you need a hug, like, then that's okay too, you know? Because at the end of the day, when you have the privilege of a family, like, then you have each other. Like, yeah. You really don't, it's a reassurance that we don't know when this is going to end or what's going on, but at least we have each other and we love each other and we love hanging out. And sometimes, you know, this, we can't control what's on the outside. We can only help each other out. And I really do think, you know, it's fun having, because my dream was always to homeschool my children. When COVID hit, they're like, oh my gosh, you gotta be kidding me. Oh. And then, but I found out that I think I would be a, like, kindergarten to like third grade great teacher.
I'm gonna send my son to your house. He would love it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I would love, that would be so much fun. I have 9 godchildren and 17 nieces and nephews, so I get like enough child like fun. So I'll do like Zooms with them or help out with homework. And but yeah, it's fun. I really love the children's universe. It's just so much fun.
Well, we don't want to let you go without talking about one of your more recent books, Goodnight.
Oh, yeah.
Goodnight Wiggly Toes. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So Goodnight Wiggly Toes was, so when my son was in kindergarten, he had this amazing teacher, Leandra Rose, and she would meditate with the kindergartners. So every day when they arrived and then every day at dismissal, and I was like, wow, that's such a great idea. Like, we should do that. So we started meditating at home and he really, really liked it. So then every year we would add like a minute or two. And then I was like, wow, I wonder if there's a book about that. And I, you know, the Toni Morrison quote, if there's a book you want to read, but it hasn't been written yet, you must be the one to write it. Like, I think that's like my motto in life. So I was like, well, can't find a book about that. So I went to Leandra and I said, hey, so I have this idea of a book that is inspired by the meditation in kindergarten. Do you want to help me write it? And she's like, sure. And we wrote it in a few days. And then I found an illustrator on Instagram. And I was like, I love your drawings. It's just like, I've never made a book. I'm like, don't worry, I know how. And then, Fanny Lam, she's amazing. And, you know, she's self-taught from Indonesia, which is, and again, you know, just being able to communicate with people from all over the world in your pocket, that's also another advantage this generation of children has. Like, we didn't have that, you know, we had pen friends, but so then we worked on that back and forth, and that again took 4 months, and then I published it under High Tree, and we sold out the first round of books, and now we're in second printing, and it's been, you know, less than a year. And again, I get to like have friends and family and companies buy books so we can give to schools that, you know, don't have libraries or books. And we just did a collaboration with the Honest Company where they bought books and bundled them with like a night mailer they have, and another friend that just is, so it's been magical. And it's been so much fun to, you go into a classroom or a school where, I don't know, they're not just used to meditating. They're all like, woo. And then the teacher's like, okay, good luck with this crowd. And then, of course, I make them go even more wild and more crazy. And we play games and, you know, and then the principals at times just look at the teachers like, who invited this person? Like, what is going on? It's just a crazy town. And then we play. And then I would ask them, you know, we all have worries in life. Like, what's your worries? And then this was actually, again, before COVID. And then depending on the school and the city you're in, you would get the worries of the children. So if you were, you know, in a beautiful school in Bel Air, you would hear, lose my iPhone, or not get picked up, or sit out soccer practice. And then you would go to a school in Inglewood, and the kids would be not being able to pay rent, don't know where we're going to sleep tonight. Like, the worries of the children depends on their socioeconomic place they're in. So that would be heartbreaking. So then we would talk about our worries, and kids just, they're so pure. They just share. And we would, you know, cry, and the teachers would cry, and other students would be like, oh, that happened to me too. Or worried that your parents might pass away, or your mom might get sick, or you might be sent home to your country, or the things kids worry about was just the same things adults worry about.
Yeah.
And then we would talk about that. And then I would say, now let's talk about what we can do that doesn't cost any money, doesn't cost anything. What can we do to feel better? And then we would go through different things, like get some sleep, or some would say eat a chocolate, or go to bed, or take a shower, or, and then eventually someone would always say, take a breath. And then from there, we would say, sit up straight. We can do it now. So if you guys just sit straight.
All right.
Roll your shoulders back. Take a deep breath through your nose, out through your mouth, in through your nose. Out through your mouth. How does that feel?
Like a million bucks.
Right?
So I'm then ready for my mid-morning nap.
Yeah. So then we would reset with our breath, and then we'd close our eyes, and then we would go through every single body part, and then open our eyes, and then talk about how we feel. And then I feel I could just give them like 1 hour of magic. That's it. I can give you like one tool you can take home. So I call anxiety worries. So if you're, you know, have all those wiggles inside, and sometimes it's actual wiggles that you can't sit still, or you need to run, or sometimes it's just that worry that it's in your stomach or your heart or your throat, or like just take 3 deep breaths, and then that helps. So
have you been doing this through Zoom a lot during the pandemic, sessions like that?
Yes, I've only done 50 Zoom visits, and then I kind of had to, you know, help the kids with school.
your own responsibilities.
But I love, you know, Zooming with like 400 kids. Like, there is nothing better. Have you ever done that? It's so much fun.
It's hilarious.
You get to like be in their house. You get to like see, you know, some brings a stuffed animal. Someone has like, you can go ask them to like bring a casserole and put it on their heads. Like, you can ask them to do fun. So we have fun. So, you know, laughter and love and magic. I survive on that.
Oh, it's amazing. Rhoda, you are amazing. And so we always ask our guests at the end of our time. We've gone overtime because it's just been
fun.
It's been fantastic. I hope you don't have to be anywhere, because we've chewed through more of your time than we promised we would. But what are we not talking enough about, just as a society, global society, that we should be talking about?
Really good question. I think we are not talking enough about what connects us. Like, what is the same for all of us? We're not talking enough about love. What do we love doing? Little magic moments, little triumphs, things that connect us, and compassion more than fear. So I wish we could talk about that more, and children. How are our kids doing? What are they doing that is scary, and all of it's causing anxiety and everything that's on the rise, but like, what's their medicine? What did your son do today that made you smile? Or just, what are we grateful for? I think when we start looking for those things, it kind of helps brighten our world a little more. I think there's more things that connects us than divides us. And I wish we could just focus more on that, give that a lot of space and front page and tweets and remakes, and instead of everything that is making us so upset, like, wow, it's like, oh, look at this little cute baby. I saw this little girl the other day on Instagram. She was skateboarding and hula hooping. Oh, I must have seen that video like a million times. I was like, the world should see. Who knows? Like, she's 7 years old. She's skateboarding and hula hooping. Do you know how hard one of those things are?
Yeah, I'd have a broken arm within a second.
I know, right? So I think just sharing more of what connects us, that I would love to see more of that.
That's a perfect answer. Rhoda, thank you so, so much for doing this. This has been
Thank you so much for having me. Sorry if I talk too much. It was so nice to get to know you guys and see you face-to-face on Zoom.
No apologies. This has been fantastic. I apologize for taking up more of your time than we said we would.
No, just an absolute treat. And it's always such a thrill to meet someone whose work I just really respect how you approach it and the sort of what you're bringing. And I applaud you for it. I can't wait to see what you come up with next. And thank you. Thank you for doing it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, guys.
May Among the Stars is available at bookstores everywhere. And you can see the full 2020 Laura Bush reading list at www.bushcenter.org/readinglist2020. And learn more about the Laura Bush Foundation for America's Libraries, which is currently accepting applications for grants, at www.laurabushfoundation.org. If you enjoyed this episode, please tell a friend, leave a review online, and let us know what you think on Twitter at the Bush Center. Thank you for listening.